Hey, this is Rob Motti. I'm in Florida this month, so please enjoy a rebroadcast episode of Faith on the Field Show presented by Cairn University.
Pastor Kyle, we're checking out some pictures. We're following along online. We're seeing different things. Tell us all about that mission trip at you and some of the Philadelphia Eagles. Carson Wentz and the AO1 Foundation did some outstanding work there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we... Yes, amazing stuff that those guys are doing. Zach Ertz was there, and Nate Sudfeld was there, and Rashard Davis, and just they're just doing what AO1's doing is fantastic. You know, Haiti is the poorest nation in the Northern Hemisphere, 80% unemployment.
Is that right?
4% mm-hmm. graduation rate from high school.
Wow.
The majority of people live on less than $2 a day, and so it's just it's a wide open field to be able to sow into. And one of the things that AO1 is doing is they're working with the partner, Mission of Hope, who we partner with in church down there, to build a gigantic sports complex. It's unreal. It will be the largest sports complex in the entire nation, bigger than the Olympic training facility. Just to be able to start training kids, bringing them in, being able to build relationship, really disciple them, share the gospel with them, be able to give them, club sports. We did a sports camp on Sunday night, with them down there as well. And, you know, these kids are playing soccer on completely dirt fields with rocks, and they're kicking, you know, they don't have balls, soccer balls, so they're kicking, you know, plastic bottles around the soccer, and they are, it's crazy what they're doing.
And they're legit.
Like crazy. and like they're bicycle kicking on rocks. It's nuts.
Wow.
But, what the Eagles are doing, and what some of the guys, are doing, but they put their money where their mouth is, not just with writing out a check. Although, hey, that's great. Solomon says money's the answer for everything. It's hard to feed hungry people without money. It's hard to build homes without money. But they're not just writing out a check. They're going in their off season, the week before OTA start. They are in 95 degree weather. Right. We're not traveling first class. We're traveling the back of trucks and in the dirt. And
that takes its toll, don't it?
It does. It absolutely does. And so, obviously I came back and got a massage because that's what you do.
There's not too much first class in Haiti.
There's not too many options. But it was a great opportunity. And I know through AO1's softball event that's coming up as well, some of the proceeds from that are going to be going down to more developing work in the developing world, especially in Haiti. So I can only encourage our listeners to be a part of that.
That's amazing.
It's actually doing something. I've been working in Haiti for 26 years.
Wow.
Really, it's the first time working with Mission of Hope that I believe that the nation can be changed for the first time, because they have a network of people. Mm-hmm. They feed 91,000 kids a day. They are, which is going up to 200,000 kids a day in the next 16 months, which is 200,000 kids a day. That's insanity. It's crazy. And I believe that there's real hope for Haiti for the first time.
Well, we applaud all of your efforts. We look at that stuff, guys, and it's incredible. Doug, you've been to Haiti a couple times. You've been going now 26 years, Pastor Kyle, and we've had different episodes and talked about this, and with Carson Wentz and getting some of his teammates involved and going down there is just an awesome thing, and it requires you going outside your comfort zone.
Absolutely,
you know,
it really does.
It requires you to be uncomfortable when you're riding around in the back of a pickup truck, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Physically, that's uncomfortable.
Without paved roads, up and down mountains.
Listen, there's no bathrooms
in 95 degree heat.
There's very little bathrooms.
There's no clean water.
No clean water.
Yeah,
all of that. And you know, a lot of people may say, hey, you know, why do they need us? Why do they need us to go down and help them and to be able to do that? Not only problems with government, which change a lot with their elections and everything
Absolutely.
They go through, but they've suffered some major natural disasters, from hurricanes and earthquakes, especially, you know, we got involved in the earthquake of 2010.
Yeah, 2000,
that just
yeah.
devastated yep. the country. And they just couldn't build back up again from the infrastructure.
Correct.
So that's why they need help. You know, we look at America and we have the government, we have the funds to be able to help out the poorest in our country, but they won't have that.
Oh, absolutely right. As a matter of fact, talking about 2010 earthquake, The government actually came to the organization that we work with there and used their base as their base of distribution for the country, because the government had the resource, but they didn't have the connections to be able to really be in the communities. And so it was actually the churches in that were connected, that were the means of change and transformation. So the government worked with the churches to make a difference in Haiti. And what a great picture that is, right? When a community of faith comes along and a government can say, hey, we have the resources, but we don't have the relationships. You have the relationships, but don't have the resource. Let's do this thing together. And it was really, 2010 really was a birthing of something new in Haiti, from the government being, the oppressor to actually the government work, the oppressor of people, the government working with the people to seeing how we could elevate community. So it's, God works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, he does.
I know we had talked just a little bit about just a small thing about that earthquake, that one of the problems in Haiti is that they have no drinking water. It's really poisoned. And yet, because of the earthquake, the tectonic plates underneath Haiti have shifted, and it caused fissures in the ground, and new springs of water have popped up out of that tragedy, have popped up to bring life where there was death. And it's just such a beautiful picture of really what can happen even in our own lives when we go through tragedy, and yet still allow God to work. The things that once, where it was dry and barren, man, God can cause shifting in our hearts.
Yeah. I heard you say that at your sermon at the Connect Church on Sunday. And I didn't realize that about the springs coming up because of that earthquake. And like you said, God works in mysterious ways.
No doubt.
Incredible ways, the plans he has for us. We're going to talk a lot about comfort today. And our guest this week is New England Patriots defensive tackle Lawrence Guy. Lawrence had learning disabilities growing up, so it was really tough on him going to school because he was bullied in special ed classes and kids picked on him. And you know how that is. They make fun of you when you're in it, have any kind of little issues and things like that. So it wasn't, though, until Lawrence was 18 years old, after he had accepted a scholarship to Arizona State to play football, that he finally got the proper testing. He wasn't even tested to figure out what his issues were. And at that point, he was diagnosed with dyslexia. And that causes you, obviously, to read your numbers backwards. And he was also diagnosed with dyscalculia, which causes him to confuse numbers. So when he got to college, he was uncomfortable going to the schools. Arizona State has this disability resource center. But he was uncomfortable going there because it gave him that same feeling of embarrassment that he had in elementary school and high school and growing up. So his first semester, he wasn't willing to step foot in that building, and he could have flunked out of school and lost his football scholarship. But finally, Lawrence Guy went outside his comfort zone. He went to that resource center. And he worked with the learning specialist there, and he began to thrive academically. And he gets drafted into the NFL, bounces around for a few seasons, and then in 2017, Bill Belichick sees something in him, signs him to a 4-year, $20 million contract. He goes on to start 15 games for the Patriots last season, and then three more in the playoffs, including the Super Bowl, who they lost to.
The Philadelphia Eagles.
So Lawrence Guy did not reach an incentive in his contract that would have given him a $500,000 bonus. He fell just short of it, but this is different in the NFL. The Patriots and Bill Belichick gave him that $500,000 clause, even though he missed out on taking enough snaps.
Eagles did that with Steph Wisniewski, too, didn't they?
I believe so.
I think that was the player that got that.
So when you appreciate somebody, when you see the talent in them and the hard work and the drive and the determination, it's great to see teams rewarding that.
That is cool.
None of this stuff that happened to Lawrence Guy would have happened if he wasn't willing to go outside his comfort zone in college and get that help he needed. And I wonder how many of us are willing to go outside our comfort zone in life, specifically in our faith. I'm going to get a little personal. I'm going to tell you a little bit about me and how I was. And for many years, I was a stagnant Christian.
I went through the motions. I prayed, I sinned, I went to confession, and I started over. And for people listening to me for the first time who don't know, I was raised Catholic, I went to church, and I left God there. And I did my thing. And that cycle continued for many, many years. And I thought, you know, I was good with God. I thought I was going to be okay as long as I followed that routine. And then I remember the first time that I was really challenged in my faith. It was 9 years ago this October. I'll never forget this day because envision this, right? So I'm sitting in, I drove a baby Hummer at that time.
Beautiful.
I was a little, yeah, I wasted all the gas.
Bougie.
Yeah.
You're bougie.
So I'm sitting in this white Hummer and I'm about to go inside a tattoo shop in Chinatown to get my fourth and what's been now my final tat. And they're all religious symbols. And I'm on the phone. I have this 45-minute conversation, might have been even an hour, before I go in there with a really good friend of mine, a media guy who is a strong man of faith. His name is Tim DeMoss, and he really helped me early in my journey. And Tim asked me if I knew what it meant to be saved by grace versus saved by works. And I believed at that time that we earned our way to heaven. So Timmy in that conversation introduced me to the truth that's stated in Ephesians 2 verses 8-9, and Paul writes, "For it is by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not from yourselves, it is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast." So I didn't understand it, because it wasn't what I knew. It was outside of my comfort zone. I wasn't comfortable being challenged with the truth. I was content being stagnant, doing the same thing over and over, because it was comfortable to me. But Timmy there, he planted a seed, and after another year of going through more experiences and different circumstances and God pulling and pulling at my heart, that seed that Tim planted led me to accept Christ as my Lord and Savior. And that dramatically changed my life, because I found peace that I had never had, and I overcame issues that I had struggled with. And I put all my faith, I put all my trust in the Lord, and what it did was it transformed me from being a stagnant Christian who was really stuck in the quicksand of religion, where I was going through all these rituals, completely void of a relationship with Christ, to where I am now. You could say I'm on fire for the Lord, hosting this show, trying my best every day in everything I say and do to make more disciples. I'm not a perfect person. I'm not a perfect Christian, but I have Jesus. I mess up every day, but I have Jesus. Good times, bad times, struggle, success, failures, saying dumb things, screwing up. I have Jesus. And now I understand. Now I finally get it. I don't have to earn my way to that kingdom by doing the good works that I was doing when I was stagnant. No, I do those good things because of my faith, and because I want to honor God, not because I have an expectation of receiving something at the end or wanting anything in return. It's because of that faith and my desire to honor the Lord. So I want to encourage believers to go outside their comfort zone, to dive deeper in their faith, to challenge themselves, to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Because if you feel a little uneasy hearing this about what I'm saying, or you feel a little uneasy sometimes when you hear your pastor preach a sermon on a Sunday, maybe think about trying to embrace that message. Because I feel if you feel a little uneasy about it, that may be God trying to do something within you.
You know, Rob, I love the quote where it's "be comfortable being uncomfortable."
Yep.
You know, and you just alluded to that, and I think that when we get too comfortable, our mind starts to think about, "Oh, this is nice." We're searching for happiness. Mm-hmm. We're searching for our own desires, and in some ways, we start thinking that we deserve it or we achieve something ourselves. When we're uncomfortable, there's this feeling that I'm not there yet. I need to work a little bit harder, or I need to ask for advice.
Yeah.
And we become more submissive to the environment that's around us in order to adapt to it. But I love that. I love that comment where we need to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And that may come through tragedy. That may come through somebody planting those seeds that are starting mm-hmm. to grow inside of us. And we're starting to hear those messages from whether it's a sermon, a radio show, a friend that may say something to us. And so God kind of keeps watering our seeds in yep. multiple yeah. different ways. And sometimes we don't like it, yep. right? I mean, you think about working out, right? We talk about athletes and, yeah. and the pain that you go through when you work out. You're like, this hurts. Right? Eating well hurts.
It ain't yes. fun.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Getting good sleep and all the things that are healthy, it hurts and it takes discipline in order to get there, but the rewards are tremendous. Yeah. Right? And a lot of times we don't want to do what is required of us, but that's what God does. God says to us, hey, you know what? You're going to have to suffer a little bit to understand the value of what my love can mean to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, look, faith is only developed in the uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
You know, Peter step out of the boat into a stormy sea, uncomfortable, right? Thank Daniel get in the lion's den, uncomfortable. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, mm-hmm. the fiery furnace. David go fight a giant with a sling and a stone. Moses go stand up against Pharaoh, the greatest person in the world mm-hmm. with the biggest army and you've got a staff. So, I mean, faith only exists and is developed in the uncomfortable. And I think, Doug, you hit it with, in the natural, you know, Paul says that physical exertion has some value, but spiritual discipline has an eternal value. And that, you know, our muscles, when we are not working them, mm-hmm. actually decrease.
Yep, absolutely.
So the only way that we can increase natural muscle is to be uncomfortable, tear them apart, tear them down, utilize them in a way that causes exertion, being uncomfortable, sweat. But I think somewhere along the way, we in our culture have confused, being comfortable, with being, with actually that comfort is the ideal state of being.
Right.
Right. So what do we try to do? Everyone says, what do you want to be? I want to be comfortable. Right. How much money do you have? I need enough money to be comfortable. Right. When will you propose? We talk about this with the young people all the time. When will you propose? When we have enough money to be comfortable.
When are you going to have a baby?
When we're comfortable.
I like that one.
So I think those are those moments where that has become the goal of our generation without actually understanding the underlying principle that really supports.
Yeah, my wife and I were talking a little bit about this too. The second level to that is when we're young. Right, we are given things, and the food's cut up for us.
Correct.
And at some point, to become a mature person, a mature Christian, we need to learn to chew our own food.
Yes.
Right. And so, yes. I have a friend of mine that gave a sermon one time, and he basically said, you know, the realistic picture for an adult, you understand for a child to cut up food, but for an adult, it's almost like, hey, you don't have a piece of meat, you have a piece of steak. That I actually put it in my mouth, I'm going to chew it up for a little bit and get it nice and moist and get all the flavor out of it, and then I'm going to give it to you later. Right? And that's kind of what we want. We want that from a podcast. We want that from a sermon that's out there. We just want somebody to say, hey, just tell me what I need to do. Right? Yeah. And just give me the instructions and I'll go do it. I'll kind of check it off my list. But in some ways, we need to go figure that out for ourselves. And we don't get that way without kind of picking up the meat, cutting it ourselves, putting it in our mouth, chewing it ourselves to the point where we have to stretch ourselves a little bit more. And so there's a lot of analogies we can put with this, but it's a great topic, Rob.
That's what I appreciate, Pastor Kyle, about your style of delivering a message in your sermons at church, at the Connect Church, is that you're not afraid to make people uneasy, to make yeah. people feel uncomfortable, because that's where the growth comes. That's yep. where the growth happens. And I feel that there's I don't want to put down other people and their style, but it's different. Everyone's different yeah. in their style and their yeah. preaching. I feel that that's important.
Everybody has to know their lane. I think, you know, mm-hmm. for us, our lane is everybody needs to feel equally welcomed, but everybody has to feel equally challenged.
Yes.
Because the goal, I hope, of the Word of God, of an encounter with God, is not to leave us the same. And so, you know, we always have to be challenged to be uncomfortable. Whenever God shows up, there is an invitation to welcome. He mm-hmm. loves people, but then he said, if you want to be my disciple, pick up your cross. Yeah. Right? Deny yourself. Come follow me. None of that's comfortable. None of that's comfortable. I know we wear crosses and think that's the same thing. It's not. So, you know, even in Jesus's love, he was loving to everyone. And yet he challenged his disciples to step into something that was extremely uncomfortable Because when we're comfortable, we rely on ourselves. When we are uncomfortable, we must rely on something bigger than ourselves. And that's where God always wants to bring us to. And I do think, unfortunately, in our generation today, we have gotten so used to everyone else being responsible for supplying what we need. The government should supply what we need. The teachers, I did not study for my test and got an F. The teacher gave me an F.
Oh, let me hear about that. Absolutely.
It's not about.
You get that
sometimes? Oh, man.
It's
finals are coming. Finals are coming.
The coach wouldn't
exactly.
play me because yeah. the coach doesn't like me. No, you didn't show up for practice three times this week.
Exactly.
But, you know, and I think that we have that culture. So when it comes to God, when it comes to our life, we still look at God the same way. God, I showed up for church today. Therefore, here are the 18 things that I deserve that I'm entitled to, and that kind of undermines our life.
Listen, I mean, let's bring it back to a sports analogy here. So there's times where a team will lose, and you'll say that's a good loss.
Yeah.
Right.
And they'll never admit it.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
We don't take any moral, but
no moral victories. Well,
let's give an example. Yeah. So the NBA playoffs are going on, and the NHL playoffs are going on, and the Philadelphia 76ers lost game 2 to the Miami Heat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they crushed them game 1. But as soon as that happened, I turned around and I was thinking to myself, you know, that's a good loss. And when you think about being a good loss, is because I really do think that the Sixers started to smell themselves a little bit.
At that point, they had won 18 in a row.
They started smelling themselves. They were throwing up shots. Marco Bellinelli was throwing up shots from 4 rows deep. He was almost sitting next to you throwing up 3 points.
Game 1, they were like 18
there, right?
for 28 from
right.
3, and in game 2, they start out 1 for 13.
Well, I think
point.
They ended up 3 for 33
yeah.
or something
was,
like that,
I
right?
do think, too, Rob, they had 34 out of the 45 shots they made, like 34 assists as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, they were moving the ball a lot more, but you're right. They started to play hero ball a little bit
and
more.
And so getting done that, it fits perfect with our topic. It's like, mm-hmm. I want them to feel comfortable. I don't want them to feel super confident. And, you know, you go back to the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, they felt like underdogs. They always mm-hmm. felt challenged the entire time. They weren't comfortable with any success. They weren't comfortable with a win in the first round, the second round, until they got to the Super Bowl and finally brought the championship home. So I think from an athletic standpoint, we realize that. And we say, that's a good loss. That's something that can drive them, motivate them a little bit more. But you know what? In my personal life, you don't need to motivate me. I don't need that trial. I don't need that suffering to happen right now. But a lot of times, it's the suffering that takes the focus off ourselves
yes.
and says, you know what? I need God.
Yes.
You know, and he brings me down to where I'm broken, where there's nothing else there. And he could say, I've surrounded you with great people to lift you up. I've given you instruction in order to
yes.
guide you. And now I'm here when you need me. Let's take these fogged up glasses off so you could see me for what I am and see my love. Right?
I think Doug, you nailed it on the head. And Rob, I think we can't, and we ultimately we will never, the only way that we can be comfortable is when we judge ourselves off of ourselves. So when we say I'm better than, so I've arrived, mm-hmm. I'm a better person than I was. I don't mm-hmm. do X, Y, Z anymore. But when mm-hmm. when I judge my life based off of who Jesus is, when I look at my life compared off the character and nature of God and the Word of God, the totality of it, I have to be uncomfortable because I don't want to forgive certain people. And it's really hard to love everybody.
Yeah.
And do I have unconditional love? Am I giving all the time? Is the heart of who I am selfish? You know, when you start looking about who God is and I base my life off of that, I can't be comfortable. I can only be comfortable when I judge myself off of myself or compare myself against someone else who I think I'm better than. And when I can look around and I say, well, I'm better than I used to be and I'm better than those people sitting in the pew in front of me, I'm all right.
Yeah.
But when I look at, can I compare myself who the holiness of God is, the ultimate love of who he is, the character, nature, and word of him, and that's why I think a lot of times when we're comfortable, we actually stay away from intimacy with God.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to strive to continually evolve. Like, I don't want to look back and say, okay, so 8 years ago, I accepted Christ and my life has stayed the same now.
Correct.
I want to look back 30 days from now and go, I've grown from a month ago
yes.
in this little area of my life. I may have said something that may have been offensive to people. So next time I have to, even though if the intent is right,
correct.
And the intention, the heart is there, maybe I have to think about how I phrase it the next time I go out there.
Yep.
I think we have to continually strive to evolve, to grow, to deepen our relationship with Christ. And then when we talk about making people feel uncomfortable, or if people are uneasy, think about why Jesus came down here.
Right.
You know?
Right.
He did not go around patting people on the back and saying to the Pharisees and all the religious leaders, hey, you're doing a great job. Hey, I love how you're following all these rules and these rituals. I love it. You're doing a great job. No, he made them uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
He made them feel uneasy.
To the point where they killed him.
His disciples uncomfortable. Time and time again, he wouldn't just say to the religious, he would say even to, hey, look, you have little faith. Did you not understand the message that I just taught you? Don't you remember I multiplied the bread and the loaf? Why are you worried about this thing? So I agree with you.
You can't even pray for me while I'm out here.
Yeah, exactly.
You fall asleep.
Yeah,
then they're going to start arguing who's the best. Right? Well, I'm the best. Right. No, I'm the best. He's like, come on, man. Yeah.
That's why Paul says, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. Because he actually puts himself, he understands his place in life. That his place in life, the ultimate goal, forgetting what lies behind, striving forward to what lies ahead, I press on to the upward call of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. It's not the upward call of my success. It's not the upward call of my future. It's not the upward call of my dreams. It's what has God called me to? Who is Jesus? And so I can forget about all my successes, right? Paul said, I'm the Jew of all Jews. You want to compare resumes? Cool. Bring it on. Let's go. My resume outshine all of y'all's, right? So he said, but that's not what I base my life on. To me, to live is Christ. To die is gain.
Well, we don't want our athletes to do that, right? So there's no way that you want to take a Super Bowl champion team like the Philadelphia Eagles and turn around and say, hey, you won last year.
Don't worry.
You're good to go. You don't need to come back next year.
No, you got to make, as Coach Doug Peterson said, you got to make this the new norm.
Exactly.
You got to make all of that the new normal for this
team. It's just funny how we have that perception of some people in some ways. You say, hey, they go through a week, they'll make some mistakes, they'll watch the film.
Yeah.
And those coaches, I'm sure, will make the players feel uncomfortable saying, hey, you think you had a great game, but what about these four mistakes that you made, you know, that potentially could have cost us, that maybe the guy dropped the ball, didn't, you know, get burned on the play or whatever. But we need to be able to look at our lives and be able to watch the tape on our week. And kind of see, hey, we had some good things, but what about these bad things too?
Hey, you take a coach like Bill Belichick, who has all this tremendous success, 5 Super Bowl rings, and there you hear from players who say, all you hear though when you're going through the tape, and he won't compliment Tom Brady, he'll call him out.
Yes.
You know, he won't compliment Gronk, he'll call him out. And you're talking about the best of the best.
Yes.
And he'll point out their flaws and their mistakes. And yeah, sometimes we do want a pat on the back, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Sometimes we do want that positive encouragement, but we're not going to grow in those areas that we may be deficient in if there's no one there helping us, to steer us, to point it out to us, to let us know that, you know what, maybe there's a different way, maybe there's a better way, maybe you need to focus on that area.
Absolutely.
When we come back, we're going to hear from Lawrence Guy, and we're going to then get into a little bit of what Ray Lewis said about Odell Beckham Jr. that caused a little bit of a stir in the sports world. So we're going to get into that a little bit later.
You're listening to Faith on a Field Show, presented by Cairn University.
Cairn University is a biblical university located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Center City, Philadelphia. With NCAA Division III athletics, a strong commitment to the arts, and majors in over 40 professional and academic fields, Cairn prepares students to serve Christ as biblically minded, well-educated, and professionally competent men and women of character. Learn more at cairn.edu.
Welcome back to Faith on a Field Show, presented by Cairn University. I'm Rob Motti with Kyle and Doug.
You guys know that I've had an opportunity to chat with several Christian players who were at the Super Bowl playing for the Philadelphia Eagles, New England Patriots, and we've been playing some of those interviews over the past several weeks now. Lawrence Guy is a defensive tackle for the Patriots. I mentioned him earlier in the show, how he overcame learning disabilities. I didn't really get into that in the conversation I had with him. We talked a little bit more about his faith. It was quick. It was short. He was drafted by the Green Bay Packers in the 7th round in 2011. He bounced around from Green Bay to Indianapolis to San Diego to Baltimore before finally finding a home in New England. And Lawrence started a career-high 15 games last season, 3 more in the playoffs. He and his wife lost a baby during her 5th month of pregnancy a couple years ago.
but he never lost his faith in God, and you'll hear why. So here's my interview with Lawrence Guy.
Hi, Lawrence, tell me a little bit about your faith and how that helps you, keeps you grounded, keeps you humble as you enjoy the success of being an NFL football player.
You know, there's only one person that gives us this ability to play this game, and that's God, you know. And every game we go into, me and my wife pray. She says St. Michael's prayer to me. All fathers, and we do every single game. So it keeps you well grounded and understanding where this blessing came from.
I know you and your wife had some adversity overcoming the loss of a child. A lot of times people can be angry at God in tough times like that or turn to him for comfort. How were you guys able to overcome all that and understand that he's got a plan that sometimes we just don't understand?
Well, those situations is all you could do is turn to him and ask for help, you know. It wasn't his fault. It wasn't our fault. It is happening. It happens all the time in the world. It's just one of those things where you spend more time going to church, more time praying, and hopefully you're blessed with a beautiful child like we were, and you just keep on going and keep your faith alive. And I feel like when you hit diversity like that, it has built your faith more. It makes it more stronger. You know, and I got God with me all the time. I got a rosary on me, all the time. He's on my side. He's been on my side since growing up. He's been on my side through my whole NFL career.
It was Lawrence Guy, New England Patriots defensive tackle. And I love what he said. Hey, God's always been on my side. He was on my side growing up. He's on my side now. He's been on my side throughout my whole career. And I didn't really talk to him about the learning disabilities that he had growing up. But for him to know that God had his back, man. God had his back.
Absolutely.
And he was uncomfortable growing up. He was not in his comfort zone, having to go to those learning disability resource center. And then he overcomes all of that. And him and his wife are blessed with a pregnancy. And then she loses the baby. And that's not a comfortable feeling. That is makes, you know, that can challenge you in your faith. And he knew that it wasn't through any fault of his. It wasn't through God's fault. It wasn't through there. It happened. It strengthened their faith. They turned more to God, and ultimately he's been able to overcome all of that and be the man that he is now. And it's because he was willing to be uncomfortable, to go outside his comfort zone.
Well, you know, you go through your life, and sometimes you're like, I don't need God. I'm doing okay by myself, right? The problem comes is when we face a challenge that we can't handle ourselves. And what are you going to rely back on?
Yeah.
Right? And we've told stories. We've heard a lot of stories from different athletes about when they're getting broken down and they really don't know where to turn, but the only place is to God. And I think, you know, in my own personal life, that testimony, my testimony is I had to make a choice.
Yeah.
Right? And you rely on the promises, the truth, everything that's in the Bible, cover to cover,
yes,
and say, you know what, this is a God that still loves me, even though it's going through a hard time. What's he trying to do? It gives you perspective. It gives you some vision in order to figure out what God may be doing, and even when you can't see the results. Or you could turn to other things, drugs, alcohol, depression, you know, and depression may still happen, but what are you going to do to fill that void? And honestly, the only thing really is God's making you uncomfortable to make you rely more on him.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'm a firm believer with you. I think salvation can happen on the mountaintop or in the valley of life.
Yeah.
Someone said to me the other day, do you always have to be in the valley, you know, everything falling apart for you to come to Jesus? And I was like, no, that's not my story. And it's not a lot of people's story. But I do believe that faith is refined in the fire, that what we really believe, more than what we say we believe, is actually developed and refined in the furnace moments. And God, look, that's, God is a fiery furnace. That's part of who he is. And he will refine the silver and the gold. And he wants to get out the dross that's not of him. Not because that makes him angry or because it makes us, unable to be loved by God, but because he knows that it's going to hurt us in the long run.
Yeah.
So it's like every good parent, right? When I see something in my son, I don't want that to stay in him, not because I love him any less if he has it, mm-hmm. but I know the pain it will cause his life and the pain it will cause others if he actually goes down that road, in life. So that's why God uses those moments and times to refine who we are.
It's totally cool to get saved at the top of the mountain, right?
Oh, yeah,
but
great.
But you just got to think, like, that's not the rest of life. You have to go down at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And I think that's wrong to make somebody think, like, hey, if you get saved at the top of the mountain and it's awesome and you're fired up and you're ready to go, like, you got to understand that. You got to walk down sometime.
You're not going to always be a champion. You're not going to always be at the top of your field. You're not always going to have the success that you're having. But, hey, if that's the moment that brings you to Christ, that brings you to salvation, that's incredible, because you're going to be ready whenever it does happen, whenever there is a downfall, whenever there is a little trial, whenever there's and we've talked about that in past episodes. But I love how you said that, Pastor Kyle, because sometimes people are under that impression that I got to be completely broken.
Yeah.
I need to be down and out at that rock bottom.
No.
And that's when I turn to my Savior.
Yeah.
No, you could be at the top of everything. You
Absolutely.
Could be at the mountaintop. And that's when you could turn to the Lord and be like, I know. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for this. Thank you for bringing me here. Thank you for the blessings. Thank you for the opportunity to be on this giant platform. Thank you so much. And I need to be with you. I need to walk with you to continue this journey in life.
Well, that's exactly what you just said, Kyle, is a lot of times we compare our faith story or our faith journey to somebody else.
Yeah.
Correct.
And you may say, hey, I got saved at the top of the mountain. I went to youth group my whole life. I went to Christian school. I always had Christian friends. I never got in trouble. I never did anything wrong. And so, like, I'm just
never got in trouble means you never got caught.
No, darn right.
Right?
Very true. Right. Very true. Very true. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right, Rob.
That wasn't you. I didn't want to throw you off your game, but you know, guys,
made me uncomfortable, Rob.
And that's bringing it right back. Speaking of uncomfortable, Ray Lewis made people feel a little bit uncomfortable last week.
He did.
He made people feel. He took some people outside of their comfort zone. So
Ray
when we come
that,
back,
yeah.
when we come, yeah, he sure can he? When we come back, we're going to hear. I'm going to read to you some of those comments from Ray Lewis, and we're going to dive into that. We're going to talk about it. You're listening to Faith on a Field Show presented by Cairn University.
Located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Philadelphia, Cairn University is the right place for students to get a dynamic experience centered on Christ and His Word. Students are equipped professionally, personally, and spiritually, and make an impact on the local community and surrounding cities. Cairn is close to everything that matters for future educators, pastors, social workers, entrepreneurs, musicians, and more. See if Cairn is the right place for you. Schedule a visit today at cairn.edu/visit.
Welcome back to Faith on a Field Show presented by Cairn University. I'm Rob Motti with Kyle and Doug.
We're talking about comfort zone and people being uncomfortable, being uneasy, maybe when they feel challenged in their faith, when they hear something that might be different than what they've grown up listening to or what they feel they've been taught or what they've learned. We want to discuss a little bit what Ray Lewis said about Odell Beckham Jr. last week that caused a slight uproar, and it got a ton of criticism for Ray Lewis, who has been a guest on this show about two or three episodes ago. And what Ray said in that interview was, where there's no God, there's chaos. Odell has removed God from his life. This is a kid who grew up under the covenant of who God really is, and everything that he's doing, he's crying out for help. And Ray goes on, says a lot more about it, but I want to stop right there because a lot of people took issue with that. And there was backlash against Ray from people who don't want to hear him talk about faith. Perhaps they hold his past against him, and I understand that. But I agree 100% with the comment, where there's no God, there's chaos. I don't know Odell Beckham Jr. like Ray does, and I can't speak on him or the conversations that they had or the commitment that Odell made to having Ray be in his life. But I couldn't agree more with where there's no God, there's chaos. And I've seen people refer to this as a wild rant. I've seen people criticize this, and I think it's a case of
people being uncomfortable hearing what Ray Lewis said, and that contributed to so much of the criticism because they don't want God brought into the conversation. But if we go back to more of what Ray said in this interview, he says that we have a lot of people reporting about it, but it's always been the duty of elders to go back to help him. Now, you guys understand the structure of having elders and people in the church community who have some wisdom, some years, some experience to counsel younger guys. And he says, so that's why I raised my hand and I told him I'm here for whatever you need. And he said, it's not what Odell said to me. It's the commitment he started to make. So we started to make those phone calls. We started to have conversation. And then I started to see that he began to distance himself a little more. And the moment, and Ray says, I don't care about religion. I'm talking about a foundation. When your foundation is disturbed, when everything you're doing is the opposite of what's got you to this place, then you're making your own bed hard. So it took Ray Lewis making these comments to get people to look at this Odell Beckham controversy in a different light. And then suddenly, everyone who jumps on to criticize Odell, now people are defending him. Like, oh, Ray Lewis got no right to say this. He's going on a wild rant. Who is he to think he is? Like, where's he coming from? But if we break down those comments, I don't see where Ray's wrong. I don't see where saying where there's no God, there's chaos is wrong. I agree with it wholeheartedly.
There's an initial reaction that has to take place, too. And when you start reading all the comments and hearing the backlash, it's a lot of just saying, well, who's Ray to say that, right? Like, who are you in order to say something like that? And, like, you know, there's Ray's past, as you mentioned, Rob, that people bring up, and that's an easy target, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of saying, hey, you know what? You can – what gives you the right? You're not perfect.
Yeah.
Right? And the response to that is, you're absolutely right.
And I don't think Ray would ever claim to be perfect.
No.
I think he
actually – In fact, he did not.
Correct.
On this show.
Exactly. Right? I think that's the beautiful thing about what he's talking about. I think the – I don't think, Rob, what he's saying is wrong. I think exactly he is right. Proverbs 29:18, where there's no godly vision, people go unrestrained into chaos, into destruction. Mm-hmm. So we know that's biblically true. I think that people take exception to it because they're looking at that and saying exactly what Doug said. You're making a judgment statement about Odell's life, saying that there's no God in it. And thus, that's why his life is the way it is. But as you read the comments of people, they're saying, how, and for media people as well, what has Odell done that's so bad? I mean, obviously they look at this and say, Ray did this and Odell hasn't done any of that.
Right.
And I think unfortunately what we've missed is that we are always waiting. We're always having to be reactionary instead of being proactive in people's lives. We're waiting for people to have to, mess up entirely before we can actually say, no, I've seen some attitude. I've seen some decision making. I've seen some thought processes that are going to lead to destruction. Mm-hmm. And so let me take an opportunity to speak into his life ahead of time instead of afterwards, ahead of time. And I actually, one of the things that I really value about, Ray Lewis, and I think the community that he's coming from, I'm not African American, but I love that what I see in some of the African American community, especially the church community, that they really have developed strong, what he said in there, elders who want to mentor younger men and speak in the life of younger men. And I do see that really came from a lot of the civil rights movement and older, wise men trying to speak in the life of younger men who maybe they saw going down a path that could have undermined their life. And I applaud Ray Lewis for that. I think we need more men in the Caucasian community, the African American community, Latino community, the Asian community who will rise up and say, man, I want to help younger men and women, to see life from a different place. Cause you and I, all of us know when you're 25, you see life from one place.
Yeah.
But when you're 55, you see life from a very different perspective. Right. And if there are some men, who can speak in the life of younger men, and help them see some things through wisdom, man, go for it. Good.
I think there's another thing that Ray was pointing out in the comments that he was making was look at the crowd you're surrounding yourself with. Look at the people. And we've talked on the show a lot. We've had a lot of guys that have come on here that have found unity with their teammates and using the term iron sharpens iron. And what are you doing to make me feel uncomfortable as you shave me down, as you sharpen my edges, as you challenge me all the time? And he basically saying, well, what kind of crowds are you running with? Right. And like that has to be reflection. And that kind of comes back down to our kids, right? You know, the biggest thing that we have for our kids is who are you surrounding yourself with? What kind of people are going to influence and speak into your life?
Correct.
And if you don't have those people in your life, how are you going to be challenged?
Correct.
You're going to be potentially motivated and encouraged to participate in things that are going to be detrimental to your health, to your performance, to your ability to live on the path that is not necessarily even the straight and narrow, but one that's not going to get you in trouble.
Look, the Bible simply says bad company corrupts good morals.
Yeah.
Parents say it a little differently, right? If all your friends jumped off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge with them? Look, your friends cannot create your future, but they absolutely can direct your steps into the future. And that's what we have to recognize, that the people that we hang out with really are shapers of some of the choices that we will make in our future. The real question is, are we going to allow God to be the shaper of our future? Or are our friends, the people we're hanging out with, the people that we want to marry, are they the people that can lead us into a godly future? Or are they going to lead us into a future? Wherever you go, there you are. Right. So if you're always the one that's at the scene of an accident, it might be you. Right. So if your friends are always ending up in this same place over and over and over again. Right. What's the definition of insanity? To do the same thing over and over and over again and expect a different result. So we do have to look at the people who we're surrounding ourselves with.
It's so easy to look at our kids, though, and say, hey, these kids that you're hanging out with potentially may have a bad influence on you. So we want you to hang out with these kids. But where are they learning that from? And they're really learning from us. Who are our friends? Who are we hanging out? What kind of attitude and standards are we modeling for the people around us? And, you know, it goes to our kids, but it also goes to the people that we work with.
Yeah.
Right? And I was actually just driving around today, and I saw a bunch of guys working on the highway, and there's a police officer standing there, and they're just having a conversation. I don't even know what they're talking about driving by, but the thought came to me. I was like, I wonder how that conversation is going. Right. And I'm just wondering, what are they talking about? Right. And I was wondering, would that be a conversation that I would feel comfortable being a part of?
Mm-hmm.
Would they make me feel uncomfortable, or would potentially I make them feel uncomfortable?
Right.
I don't even know who they are. Right. But in that situation, it could be guy talk. Right. It could be, you know, talking about locker room talk. Right.
I got something about that.
And I don't even know why I thought that. You know, maybe God's planting a seed for somebody else to hear out there. But I've been on football sidelines. Uh-huh. I've been in athletics where, you know, you become desensitized to where F-bombs are being dropped all the time, and language and motivating talk is bad, right? I mean, it's awful language that's coming out of coaches' mouths, to the point where now if I go back there, I'm like, whoa, what is this? I haven't heard that in a long time, right? But that's what we face on a daily basis. But who are we surrounding ourselves with so we don't become desensitized to that language?
I want to touch on that. Yeah, and it's a great point you bring up, because this is an example of, you know, doing this show, a lot of times I feel like we need to be – I love to give examples of things that I went through.
Yes.
Because other people may be going through that. But before I do that, I wanted to point out that the reason Ray Lewis was addressing the Odell Beckham Jr. situation is because there was a video that was put out. And even though Odell has never done anything, he hasn't been arrested or charged with any kind of crime or anything. But there was a video that was put out that's tweeted out that he's in bed with a woman, a pizza, a credit card, a white powdery substance, and he's holding some type of brown cigarette. So what Ray is doing as an elder is trying to speak into his life, because a moment like that can lead, decisions like that, surrounding yourselves in that environment can lead to something bigger or worse happening in the future. In regards to what you're saying about the conversation those guys are having. So at a Sixers Heat game, I forget if it was game one or two, and I run into a former colleague who I hadn't seen in maybe 12 years, maybe longer, okay? So he does not know this version
of
me.
Of you. Yes,
right?
Yes.
He doesn't know the dad the husband, the committed to Christ, devout in my faith. He doesn't know
the
that
faith
guy.
The field show no, host, right?
He, yeah. he knows the old me. So he's asking me questions that make me feel uncomfortable because it's like, oh man. So he's checking out the Sixers dance team and he's looking at the girls who deliver food to the people in the front row and everything. And I'm uncomfortable because I don't want to be in that environment having a conversation where I don't look at women that way. I no longer, I'm completely opposite. I've gone like a total 180 where I don't even acknowledge someone else's beauty other than my wife. You know, I won't even say she's gorgeous. I won't say that. Yeah. And that's just me. It's not that there's something wrong.
Yeah, it's honoring Remy.
Yeah.
And
that's the way
your wife to feel.
That's the way I look
right?
at it. Yeah, yeah. You know, and to the point where I've said this before where she's like, oh, come on. It's so obvious that this girl is like incredibly beautiful or whatever. I'm like, that's awesome, babe. You want to say that about her? That's fine. I don't have to say it.
Right,
she's heard
right.
it before. So now I'm in this conversation and I'm like, showing pictures of my girls because that's on my phone. That's the first thing. I'm like, yeah, and I felt completely uncomfortable, but I missed an opportunity.
Mm.
I feel like I missed a little chance to say, you know, you don't know how I've changed since the last time we saw each other. And sometimes I'm in a lot of those conversations where people remember my. The old way of living, who I was before, and they'll talk about things or they'll bring things up and it makes me uncomfortable. And I wonder, this is a question kind of to you guys, you know, how do you reach out or how do you address that without being like slapping someone over the head with the Bible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Try and maintain that. But hey, man, like, you know, I appreciate what you're saying and what you're doing or whatever it is you want to talk about. But, you know, it's not me anymore. I'm different that way. And sometimes I feel like I've been challenged by people who know the new me, who knew the old me and say, well, how can you now go out there and say, don't do this or honor your wives or honor when in the past, you know, you're running around. It happens to me down in Florida. You know, running around Clearwater and you're getting numbers and you're hooking up and you're doing this. And now all of a sudden you're this big, you know, and they'll throw Bible tote or Jesus freak and all that stuff at me. And I go, well, you know, Paul used to kill Christians and he converted. So I feel like I missed an opportunity and maybe this is a segment where I can seek some advice.
Yeah. Look, Rob, that's, can I just say, I've missed those opportunities as well.
And I'm
sure we all have. And I think when I do miss those opportunities, I've tried to go back and say, okay, let me prepare for the next one.
Yeah.
What in this, cause that situation is going to happen, like you just said, 1,000 more times in your life. And it may be a different person in a different scenario, but the tie together in that is the Bible talks about, always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that you have in Jesus. So practice that moment. Mm-hmm. Just practice that moment. Yeah. You know, when you,
for game day, right?
Yeah, yeah. People may not.
I'm gonna, day, right?
Like so, in this moment right here with you, I know that you come prepared for this show. Like you don't just, you have a lot of brilliance that comes off the top of your head, but you've written a lot of stuff before we've come in. Because you know what you want to say. You know that you are answering questions for listeners before those listeners ever ask the question. That, just take that time and begin to say that. It's not Bible thumping. It's telling your story.
That's a good point.
My story. This is, and it's, hey, look, I know I was like that. And you're right. But man, I have a daughter. I have daughters now. I have a wife now. Man, my life's been changed. And it's not just because I'm a dad. It's not just because I got married. It's because I had a real encounter with Jesus. And if you like, man, can I just share a little bit with you about that? So it's not about saying how wrong they are, saying, well, I don't do that anymore, because then it's you're telling me I'm wrong.
It's like
and
a
what,
condemnation.
Correct.
So
the
exactly
biggest thing
right.
is you never want to make them feel uncomfortable or that you're better than somebody else.
Correct.
Right? It's like, hey, I'm better than you now. Right. And that's the real struggle that we face in some of those situations. It's not like, hey, I've arrived at this point and I look down on all that action or that behavior because I'm better than
correct.
That now.
No, but
right?
you could too. See, I always like,
Because it's grace. It's all about grace.
I always feel like I, and that's why I enjoy, I go out there and I share my story and I share my testimony wherever I can, because I don't want people to go down that same road.
Right.
And I want to prevent it from ever escalating. And I want to help, especially young adults and people, you know, who may be tempted through those kind of same temptations that I had, that I acted on, that I failed upon, that caused all kinds of chaos.
Yep.
I want to try and prevent that from happening.
It's cool to miss an opportunity every now and then, though, because then you go back and say, I messed that up.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Let me refocus and come back better. You know, but Rob, that's a great heart and a great topic for another conversation.
Maybe it'll be an episode down the road.
Thank you to all of our listeners and followers. Huge thank you to Pastor Scott Foreman for all of his excellent work on our website, podcast, blog, and all that he does to make us present better. Thanks to Jim Henderson for all his work behind the scenes. Thank you to our wives. Thank you to Ryan Lennox for producing the show. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Big thanks to 610 ESPN Philly, 107.5 Alive, and Joy FM Sports for airing Faith on the Field show presented by Kearney University. For the crew here, I'm Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference, be a blessing.
Located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Philadelphia, Kearney University is the right place for students to get a dynamic experience centered on Christ and His Word. Students are equipped professionally, personally, and spiritually, and make an impact on the local community and surrounding cities. Kearney is close to everything that matters for future educators, pastors, social workers, entrepreneurs, musicians, and more. See if Kearney is the right place for you. Schedule a visit today at kearney.edu/visit.